welcome to the latest edition of the Global Game Podcast from the World Baseball Softball Confederation, the official podcast of WBSC. My name is Tyler Mon. It has been a while. We have had such a busy and fantastic Northern Hemisphere summer and fall as we have rolled through some World Cups and crowned world champions at various levels across the games of baseball and softball, Baseball 5, and we've had some fun all across the globe. And a huge thanks to all of you who have been tuned into the broadcasts and interacting with us on social media and following along and cheering your national teams. It's hard to believe, but the calendar year 2022 coming to a close pretty soon. And before it does, we've got one major event left to get started, and that is the Men's Softball World Cup, which is coming up at the end of November and into the beginning of December in New Zealand, one of the international legendary hallowed grounds of softball. New Zealand will be playing host to the Men's Softball World Cup here in 2022, and not only will New Zealand be playing host on home soil, it'll be doing so after a year delay. This event was originally scheduled, of course, to be held in 2021, and due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, was pushed back to 2022, so it is a long-anticipated event. And the head coach of New Zealand men's softball national team, Mark Sorensen, was kind enough to stop by and give us some time on this month's edition of the Global Game Podcast. We covered a whole bunch of topics from what the wait has been like over the last couple of years to how to keep a team engaged and still excited about their upcoming mission when it feels like maybe it's never going to come. We got a chance to talk about a lot of fun and interesting stuff, and a big thanks to Mark for stopping by to give us some time. Mark Sorensen from Softball New Zealand joins this month's episode of the Global Game from WBSC. Well, so pleased to be joined on this month's edition of the Global Game Podcast from the World Baseball Softball Confederation by the man who will be piloting the host nation for the 2022 Men's Softball World Cup, as Mark Sorensen, the head coach of the New Zealand national team, joins us. Mark, it's so good to talk to you. It's Friday morning for you. It's Thursday afternoon for me. You are 2 weeks out, essentially, from the start of this Softball World Cup that you guys have been waiting around for a very long time. 2 weeks away from the start. First off, thanks so much for giving us the time. And secondly, being this close, what's the emotion like right now for you?
Oh, hey, Tyler, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on board. 2 weeks out, it seemed like it was never going to get to this stage. It always seemed like it was so far away, you know, with, with the interruption with COVID and everything going on, it seemed like we've been waiting for this forever. But, you know, we got together as a group a little over a week ago and spent some time, and you know, we talked to the guys about it being real now. You know, it's all of a sudden got real. So just in the middle of a home block, and then we get back together on Monday. But I know that the guys are excited, as I am, to get the show on the road come November 26th.
November 26th through December 4th in New Zealand. And we're going to talk a lot about the field that you'll be facing, the amount of talented countries who are going to be taking part in this 2022 Men's Softball World Cup. But I want to go back, Mark, and it feels almost sort of good that we're getting to a stage where I feel like the interviews are getting fewer and further between, that we have to be like, all right, let's talk about COVID and the start of the pandemic and blah, blah, blah. But for you guys, it really is a very heavy storyline coming into this World Cup, because coming out of 2019, you didn't have the finish that you wanted in that year's edition of the World Cup. You're set to host the event in 2021. Instead, it gets pushed back because of the pandemic. What has the process been like to kind of, you know, name your roster, maybe be on track to host this thing in 2021 after the first year of the pandemic, and then seeing it pushed back, keeping your guys together, training? Obviously, New Zealand with travel restrictions and the borders closed for a longer time, you didn't get a chance to do a ton of international competition. But what have the last couple of years been like getting this group together and kind of keeping them together to develop for this year?
Yeah, quite a big question, but it COVID hit and we circled the wagons here in New Zealand. We shut down. Nobody was coming in. Nobody was going out. You know, and I guess depending on what side of the political divide you're on, we don't need to go into that sort of relative merit. But the reality is we last weekend when the Black Sox went on the diamond and we're playing to club sides here in New Zealand, is the first time that we've played together in 3.5 years. Okay, so we haven't played. You know, we haven't been able to get out. We've had a thing called managed isolation here, where if you did manage to leave the country, when you came back, you had to be in quarantine for 14 days. So in order to get a beneficial tour overseas, you know, and for us, it may be Australia or Japan or somewhere not too far away, you know, you really need a couple of weeks, right? So if you're doing 2 weeks and then you had 2 weeks of MIQ as well, it 4 weeks off for guys, you know, away from their jobs and stuff and family is quite a big thing. And it wasn't something that we could ask them to do. So we tried to manage the program domestically. And we still had our domestic competition going with our regional leagues that were happening around the country, and then our provincial competition also happening. So, you know, we still had a normal domestic competition for the Sox themselves. We got together a couple of times a year, normally start and finish of a season. We had camps together and worked on different things, and also just worked on connection. You know, one of the big things during COVID is one of the things we learned, a priority was just about staying connected.
Yeah.
You know, so when we went into the initial lockdown period in March 2020, our management group, we broke the playing squad up into bite-sized chunks, and we each had a welfare group that we looked after. And that welfare group was just touching base once a week during the lockdown, just chatting, making sure everybody was all right. And just staying connected, you know. And then the first opportunity we got, we got the guys together and did some conditioning work together. And again, it wasn't about results. It wasn't about standards. It was actually just about the connection. So over the last couple of years, it's really about being just really staying connected, making sure that we maintained our relevance, because the one thing that we didn't want to do was get zoomed out, you know, because we had plenty of Zoom meetings and we brought in external speakers and stuff. But when you look around the room and you realize that you were starting to lose people and that people were getting zoomed out, we peeled that back a little bit, you know, because you want a level of engagement as well, which is really important. So we needed to make sure the program was still relevant. We needed to make sure that we were well connected with our athletes. And we also needed to try and keep it fresh. And some of the things that we would focus on in the past weren't as much of a priority as building connections and bonds together. So, you know, in terms of preparing for 2021 and now coming through to nearly the end of 2022, what that's done and what I've seen is that, you know, and probably none more so than we've got a 19-year-old in our team that if the event wasn't there last year, if the event was held last year, he wouldn't have been in the team. He would have been too young. So not, you know, he wouldn't have matured the way that he had. So, you know, the extra 18 months has played into the young guys' hands and given them a little bit extra time to mature. But at the other end of the scale, there's a couple of guys that could possibly have gone if it was 2021, but now an extra 18 months on the end of their career has just pushed it a bridge too far. So, you know, worked in favour and against different athletes. And we've lost about a handful of guys from the program that just decided to, and this is from a big squad of 40 that we had initially, that have just decided that they wanted to pursue other interests. And, you know, the COVID made them realise that there's other things in life that they want to pursue. So, you know, and we had to respect that.
It is really fascinating talking with athletes around the world, especially about, you know, the COVID era either focused athletes in more on this is what I want to do. Or like you said, I think it opened doors for a lot of people who maybe were kind of 1 foot out already and decided like, no, I think I'm ready to move on to the next chapter. And for you guys, especially now knowing that the group that you have is the group that really wants to be there. They've committed through the pandemic and through all the challenges of, you know, meeting over Zoom and just trying to stay in touch and all of that. How has that helped build kind of a team unit compared to, you know, if we were still, I think we'd all still rather be back in the normalcy of the pre-pandemic world. But there are a lot of things that people and athletes don't take for granted now that I think we did before. I feel like that probably contributes something big to being able to build a team culture.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that stood out for me over this is around mental health, you know, and mindfulness, I suppose, you know, so, you know, whilst none of us really wanted to go into that COVID era, I think there've been some real key learnings for us through it in terms of, you know, from a personal point of view that, you know, about, you know, where life just seems to get, we're on a treadmill and life just seems to get faster and faster and faster. And we put so much pressure on ourselves to get more done. And, you know, the simple things around staying in the moment and being present, you know, having a purpose, and then that outcome can often take care of itself, a simple mindfulness process. You know, I really believe that, you know, adaptability has become, you know, a key component to teams and building teams together, because nothing will substitute being together. You know, the Zoom meetings are great, the phone calls are great, but there's nothing like seeing a team come together that hasn't seen each other for some time. And you know, that bond that is there, whether the guys have known each other for a while, but, you know, it's a lot easier to do it in person. You know, you can go out 10-pin bowling. I mean, we went go-karting last week and, you know, everybody's on the same level. You know, everybody's on the same grid. You know, got the same cars, although I felt I got a slow one. But, you know, it wasn't about who, you know, and the title that I had or the name on my back. It was actually just all of us having some fun and laughing and forgetting about softball and building that bond. And, you know, chemistry and bond and culture is a buzzword, you know, team spirit, whatever you want to call it, that is critical for success in all walks of life, you know, whether it be, you know, whether your home team, whether your work team, or, you know, in a ball team. You know, I'm a big advocate of, you know, that chemistry and bond.
Well, let's talk about this team and this run in 2022. You guys are coming off of a World Cup in Prague in 2019 that, like I said earlier, didn't finish the way you wanted, didn't get to play for a world championship there. And, you know, that's the luxury of being involved in New Zealand softball, is that that's the goal every time out, is you want to be playing for a championship. It's also a double-edged sword because the standard of excellence there sometimes can be tough when other countries, other national federations continue to grow. And I know after that World Cup, you said, yeah, a lot of countries have made such big progress that it feels like the field is wider now. When you look back on 2019, what were the biggest lessons that you guys as a staff and as a group took away from that, and how you want to implement the lessons that you learned there in 22, especially now having it on home soil? But we'll talk about that in a separate question. What are the biggest lessons you took out of 19?
Well, one was we still have the capability. You know, so within the group, and if I look at 19, we had the capability to do better than what we did. But also another lesson was that, you know, and as you rightly pointed out, you know, the rest of the world has improved. And the pool, I think, is, you know, there's a good 5 or 6 countries that have the opportunity to win this event, you know. And I don't know that there's many global events that would have 5 or 6 teams competing and capable of winning the title. So,
really good point.
You know, and that's not meant to demean any of the successes of teams from years gone by, but, you know, I think this is legit, you know. But I'm biased about men's fast pitch, you know. But
and understand us,
yeah. For us, it was, you know, one of the key learnings was that 90% is no longer good enough. You know, in order to succeed, we need to be able to put out 100%, you know, and if we're off our game, we're not going to win. You know, of the four of the games that we lost, we were in the lead. So we got ourselves into a position to win, but we didn't, you know. So the great, you know, you often learn more from failure than you do success, because you look deeper in it and it forces you to, you know, to peel back some extra layers that you know are going to hurt to go under, but you've got to go down there and you've got to, you know, I guess, provide or expose a level of vulnerability, because, you know, you know, what you're going to learn may not be something that sits well with you. And certainly, you know, I'm my own biggest critic. You know, I set high standards. I expect high standards. But also, I'd like to think that I'm pretty honest in terms of self-evaluation. And there were some areas for me that I needed to be better this time around than last time, and none more so than, you know, on the diamond. We'd come off a great success in 2017, and we'd enjoyed the fruits of success, and we got complacent, you know, and that's something that I always look at it from a personal point of view, that, you know, a team, you know, a group is responsible for failure in a game, but, you know, head coach, a la me, is responsible for the failure of a campaign. You know, so the failure of our 19 campaign sits fairly and squarely with me in terms of, you know, the outcome there. So would have been easy just to, you know, I've been involved with this team and this game for a long, long time. Would have been easy to say, hey, got a few rings, got a few championships. It's pretty nice. Thanks very much. I'm going to hop on my boat and sail away. But that's not the type of person I am. You know, I really wanted to right the ship, I suppose, for the use of a term, and I'm not a sailing guy, but it's more about, you know, just getting things back on track. And, you know, what that looks like isn't just about success on the diamond. You know, it's about, for me, creating a pathway for young athletes in New Zealand to play for the Black Sox. But it's also creating a pool of talent, you know, a group of, you know, so I guess it's like a vision, is to create a, you know, a group of likable guys, likable, unselfish guys, you know, that the whole sport in New Zealand can rally behind. You know, and I think something simple like that for me would be seen as success. And, you know, I've said to our CEO, hey, you know, we're going to compete. We're going to be there late in the tournament. But if we don't succeed, you're going to, you know, there'll be a team that's prepared to, you know, do well on the international stage for the next decade. You know, we've got a good group of young men that are really committed and talented, and some of them are inexperienced, but, you know, they're good ballers. And I'm excited by, you know, what they bring to the table.
That's a great kind of preview of what you are looking forward to seeing from your team. And one of the things I remember talking with your captain, Cole Evans, about when we talked for, it was episode 10 of the Global Game Podcast back in April, for anybody who hasn't heard it and wants to go back and check out that interview. It was so great talking to Cole and just being able to feel his excitement for this event from, you know, 8,000, 10,000 miles away, whatever I am. And one of the things that he said, and we kind of touched on earlier, is the fact that it is such a highly competitive event now, that you've got, you know, like you said, half a dozen teams who are going in and could have legitimate expectations to be there at the end and play for a championship. Over the span of your career with Softball New Zealand, what does that mean in terms of the forward growth of the sport in other countries, for a nation that's done it so well and has played at the top level for so long? What does it mean from Softball New Zealand's perspective to see, you know, Argentina winning a world championship last time out, Czech Republic hosting a World Cup and a team that you'll play on day one coming up in a couple of weeks, Japan, obviously the strides that they've taken, Canada? What does that mean with the growth of the game to you?
Well, it's probably more from a personal point of view that, you know, I think the growth of the game is fantastic. You know, the way that we're seeing, you know, the countries you've mentioned, plus the other, you know, the others that are going to be contending and being there, you know, none more so than our neighbours across the ditch in Australia, you know, who won in 2009. So I think, you know, the more that we can get global growth for the game, the better the game will be. The challenge then for us is about how do we connect in between pinnacle events, right? So, you know, it's great that we have this World Cup here, but what can we do? And can we do some, you know, set up more of a, I don't know, do you call it a global calendar, you know, a regular campaign? I know you've got the Pan American Games where Pan American countries get together. You've got the European Championships. It's probably because we're right down the bottom of the world that we're missing out on this stuff. But is there a way that we can, you know, regionalize some kind of meaningful competition where we're getting regular competition? Because then we have a great, you know, we talked about how competitive it is. You know, for it to be competitive, you've got to have world-class athletes, which our sport does have. So then we've got a vehicle to promote the athletes and the sport to more of a corporate global audience, which there's an opportunity for more sponsorship, more exposure with TV and coverage and radio. So you get into a whole marketing thing. And that in itself will help us attract more people wanting to play the game. It's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but, you know, I think the more the merrier, you know, because the other countries getting better bring a different flavor, you know, and you because you're not cookie cutting everything, you know, you got different styles of play, different approaches, you know, different philosophies, you know, so, but everybody's coming together with, you know, trying to hit a round ball with a round bat that's thrown windmill motion, you know, 60 feet to the bases, simple thing, three up, three down. But it's a, I just love it. It's a beautiful game. And, you know, I think the more that we can, I promote it from the rooftops, every opportunity I get, even domestically here, you know, we battle with some of the bigger, more favorable sports, but any opportunity I get, I'm flying that flag. Cause, you know, I think even over here, you know, there's untapped knowledge about the quality of the athlete that's involved in our sport. And, you know, I think this upcoming event is going to give us a great opportunity to, you know, showcase. And for us, all I'm worried about is domestically, you know, the world-class athletes that there are in the sport.
You hit the nail on the head with the things that I love most about the international bat and ball sports, which is that you get 12 countries together for a World Cup. Everybody's going to play a slightly different style. Some are going to play drastically different styles from other countries, which I find fascinating for a game that on the outset looks like, well, there's probably one way that you play this. And there's not. There's, you know, innumerable. And that's massive. And it's massive to be able to diversify and grow the sport. And I know, you know, there is nothing that helps impact young athletes, especially, quite as much as seeing it up close and personal. And with that, you all have a huge opportunity this time around, being able to host this event, you know, on home soil and get a chance to trot out there at Rosedale Park and, you know, put your game on in front of the world. What does this mean from the standpoint of being able to get that visibility and that interpersonal connection where, you know, if you win a world championship, but it's across the globe, it hits differently than if young athletes, families, fans are able to see you in person. How cool is this to be able to have it on home soil in New Zealand?
Oh, I think it's the pinnacle. You know, I was fortunate or unfortunate to only get to have experience it once when I was playing. So to be able to get it now, you know, in a coaching sense is huge. Cause I saw that in 2004, how, you know, it really took our country along on a journey, you know, it took them along on the ride. And yeah, what's happened in the past, if you win it overseas, you become topical for about a week. And normally it's in our winter months, which in winter rugby's played here and rugby is the, you know, our biggest sport.
Right.
But the good thing is it's happening in summer, right? So it's here, it's in our ball season, you know, and it gives our whole softballing public an opportunity to get in behind it. And I know a lot of people, you know, are planning their summer holidays around coming to Auckland or going to Auckland, going to Rosedale for that week. You know, they want to make sure they're there because the ones that were there in 2004 had a fantastic experience, you know, and that was capped by the success that we had, but the whole experience, you know, I think there's one thing that that we do well down here in New Zealand is that we run really good events. And you know, that's one thing that people can be assured of. They'll turn up to Rosedale Park and they'll see an event that's been years in the planning, but you know, set up by a great group of people that are volunteers that know how to run events. You know, they've got the support of our largest city, Auckland, with the city council, and they've poured hundreds of thousands of dollars into upgrading the complex and the field. And we were there last week, and you know, the guys on the you know, down to the ground crew, they were coming and asking, you know, how's the mound, how's the batter's box, what can we do to improve it, you know, and we had some great discussions with them around it. But the beautiful thing for me is that they're asking, you know, they're not just going out there and doing it, and the players have to adjust. They're actually keen on getting feedback from, you know, the players and the teams as to how it's going. So yeah, yeah, as I said before, I'm probably biased, but I think we run some pretty good events, and I'm looking forward to Rosedale, you know, in a couple of weeks being added to the list of successful events that we've hosted.
the center of the softball universe coming up on the 25th of November. Mark, a couple more for you, and I'm going to let you get on with your Friday. But I want to get your perspective as being somebody who has seen these events from every different angle. From being, you know, a head coach now, going back to your playing days, how is the pressure different? You know, something that you got to experience on home soil as a player, and now, you know, being somebody who's piloting a team and into a campaign, what makes it different? You know, you've sort of got a little bit more control over it in a certain circumstance as a player when you're on the field, but you're kind of overseeing, you got that CEO role as a head coach, but it's also somewhat hands-off because you're stuck in the dugout. How does it feel different on these two different sides of it for you?
Oh, yeah, I struggled in the beginning, eh? because, you, as a player, you're used to being able to, you know, I was a catcher, so I'd control the game, you know, I'd hit in the middle of the order, so, and, you know, I could, with one swing of the bat, I could turn the game, right, as a player. Now it's about the skills and talents that you help the athletes develop, but also, and more so in linking back to what I said before, but it's the environment that you create that enables people to perform at a high level, you know? So it's not, you know, I think I came into the coaching wanting to turn the dial straight away and control, you know, I was hit and running from the first pitch in the top of the first with no one on base, you know? You're wanting to get those signals out there, you want to make things happen, and it's like, whoa, easy, cowboy. So, you know, just, and even just standing on third base, you know, in the coach's box, it was like, hey, where do I go now? You know,
what am I supposed to do next?
First couple of games was like, yeah, right. I've already given a signal. Now, what do I do? What do I do with my hands here? What can I, you know, I struggled in the beginning, you know, to find my rhythm and find how I connected with the game. You know, I think it was a strength I had when I played, was it, you know, in terms of your connection to the game and understand the flow and how you can impact on that flow of the game and then turn it into your favour. So, yeah, I just and that was something in Prague in 19 that I lost. But we, yeah, it's a delicate balance, you know, because you are relying on the athletes that you are preparing to perform. So, you know, a lot of things need to go well, but also, you know, I guess one of the things that I've done here over the last couple of years is I've jumped in and helped coach a couple of local teams, and only in specific events, because I just needed to get on the diamond, needed to get out there and, you know, stand at third base and look at the pitcher and see if I could pick any grips and give some signals and, you know, go through the scenario of, you know, what happens in a game, because you can watch all you like from behind the outfield fence and in the stand, and you know, you go through your selection routine, but nothing substitutes being out there on the diamond. You know, it's like the players, you know, on diamond experience, you can practice as much as you like, but it's all about being on the diamond. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, and thankfully, you know, especially this year, I've had about 15, 17 games on the diamond. So, you know, a lot different than the last cycle. But, you know, we've created a lot of those opportunities, a lot of those games. So, you know, you make do with what you've got, don't you?
And soon you get to get after it for real. And that's where I'm going to wrap this up, is I'm going to ask you to tell me about the things that excite you most about your 2022 team, getting a chance to throw this thing out there on home soil and play for a world championship in the Men's Softball World Cup. What are your keys for this World Cup, and what excites you most about the team that you've got and how high they can go?
What excites me the most is at the moment is how fit the group is. So, you know, we've had them training for, a little over a year. But probably the last 6 months has really ramped up in terms of their strength and conditioning. So, you know, we're a fitter, faster team than what we have been in the past. That's not going to help us steal first, though.
Good point.
But it... I think it's a great foundation, you know, and we've, you know, I talked about a little bit about a vision before, about a group of likable, unselfish guys, you know, and you know, I'm seeing that group develop, you know, because we're only part of the way through our journey of pulling the team together. So, you know, the team is fit. They're prepared to work for each other. You know, they're a talented group. And, you know, I like our chances of competing and these type of events. It's about, you know, it's about getting a good start. You know, so you want to get off to a good start in an event. You want to establish some routines and rhythms for the event. And then you just, the old cliche, it's just taking it day by day. You know, we've broken the tournament down into different sections and get through each section with, you know, unscathed and go from there. But, you know, we're sort of planning, you know, we've planned on a number of different scenarios, you know, and even with me not coaching last weekend, with me not coaching on third base, spent some time in the dugout. Just who knows, I might get thrown out of a game, you know. So the players get used to, you know, seeing someone else. My assistant, Darryl Marino, he ran the cutter for a couple of games there. So, you know, we're trying to factor in every type of scenario there.
Well, it's all coming up real soon. 1:30 in the afternoon on November 26th, New Zealand out of Group A will get things rolling against last time out, the host nation, the Czech Republic. And Mark Sorensen, the head coach of the New Zealand men's national softball team. Mark, best of luck. Enjoy every moment possible down there. And we'll be watching as you make the pursuit of another world championship, this time on home soil. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, Tyler. Great being on board.
What a great conversation, and such a huge thanks to Mark Sorensen for stopping by this month's edition of the Global Game from WBSC. The Men's Softball World Cup is on the docket. They are on deck. Baseball 5 World Cup wrapping up in Mexico City this week. And starting on November 26th through December 4th in Auckland, the Men's Softball World Cup. You can follow along at WBSC.org. You can get all the information on how to follow your teams and check out some broadcasts and everything else. From Auckland, New Zealand, as the Men's Softball World Cup kicks off play, the 17th edition coming up on November 26th. Huge thanks to everybody at WBSC for pitching in with all of our events over the course of this summer. We've had such a fun year, and can't wait to get back to it in 2023 and beyond. And to our outstanding producer, Alan Hrastoviak, who was actually right now, as of our recording, busting his tail in Mexico City with Baseball 5, and then he's going to put out a nice little podcast as well. So huge thanks to Alan and everybody else at WBSC. For the entire organization, my name is Tyler Maughan. Huge thanks once more to Mark Sorensen for stopping by to talk some Men's Softball World Cup with us, and we'll catch you next month on the Global Game from WBSC.